Today on The Independent, Pete and I recap Notre Dame's blue-gold spring football game and look ahead to the Irish's needs this offseason.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. And Matt, we were both at Notre Dame's spring game over the weekend where, at least the way I saw it, the most significant news had nothing to do with the two-hour scrimmage that happened. At this point, I don't even remember who won blue or gold, but
Team Wash
won.
Yeah, that's 21
thing with the WWE belt in the locker room at the end. But by far, to me, the most significant thing was that Notre Dame has now formally announced that there will be a new football building in the fall of 2026. So a bit in the distance, but it's, I think it's of all Notre Dame's investments, whether that be Campus Crossroads, the new indoor facility, to me, those were about Notre Dame getting caught up to what everyone else is doing. This building, I think, gives Notre Dame a chance to get ahead. It's a blank slate for training, for recovery, for nutrition. And I think there are ways that Notre Dame can sort of go beyond what other people are doing, not just compete in the arms race, but maybe get ahead. I'm not saying win it because it's always going on. It's a never ending thing. But that to me was very significant of Notre Dame investing in a way that may give them a chance to get ahead in a part of college football where you're competing against Alabama and Georgia and Clemson and Texas and all these other schools. This operations center has a chance to maybe set a new standard for what can be done in college football.
Yeah, I think if you go into it with a blank slate, Pete, you can use the brain power there to come up with some creative kind of enhancements. And I say that because, again, in this arms race of college football, a lot of it has been a Instagrammable locker room or something to catch someone's fleeting attention span on social media. A lot less of it is practical. I think, I've not been to Kentucky's facilities, but I've heard Kentucky football's facility is one of the best because they've just got some of the best recovery space and practical needs that you need for a football program. I would say Clemson, when you get past the slide and all the other fun stuff there, they've been at the forefront of concussion studies and recoveries and things of that nature. And that's where I think if you're Notre Dame, you can really get a chance here to get ahead. Like you said, I mean, you had a great story on The Athletic, I think on Sunday, Benjamin Morrison being at the groundbreaking, essentially saying he was ready to write Notre Dame off until they showed him the indoor practice field. So Marcus Freeman and everyone else can trot out the company line about facilities not mattering or us not mattering, but not losing any recruits because of facilities because they weren't quote unquote Notre Dame men, but they matter. It matters in how you feel when you're on campus. It matters how you feel about this place's commitment to football. And maybe there were some questions about that a couple of years ago. There aren't now. And you've spoken and written about that ad nauseum this whole offseason, whether it's the enhanced assistant coach contracts, the lengthy extensions, the indoor facility, their upgrades in the NIL and portal department, and the way everyone from academics and athletics seems to be in sync as far as, adapting the transfer process, if you will, to meet a college football power's needs in 2024. I think this was the last missing piece, was a brick and mortar complex where the coaches are going every day and hosting recruits in their office and so forth. And I'll be curious to see what it all looks like. It was probably intentionally light on details, just as far as, what everything there is going to be. Obviously you need more practical space because there are more people working for that program right now than there were when it was first released 15, 20 years ago or built 15 or 20 years ago. But I'll be very curious to see what some of the enhancements beyond just the brick and mortar, beyond the actual physical space is there to make Notre Dame, Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's really the $1 million question, or maybe the $100 million question. Yeah,
nine figures.
Yeah, what you do with the space, and whether that's Lauren Landau coming in from the NFL and sort of his work training elite athletes, not just in the NFL but other professional sports, Olympians. John Weigel, who's been here a couple of years now, and I wrote a story last year, which I think fits a little bit. It makes more sense now after the building comes online, where he came here from Major League Baseball and really spent the first year kind of, he described it as a listening tour of, okay, what do you need? You know, what kind of staffing needs do we have? What kind of recovery needs do we have? What kind of sleep needs do we have? And so now to be here with this building coming online, it's, you know, it's sort of this blank slate that you can make it whatever you want. They're going to have an incredible amount of space to, I think, be at the forefront of some things that are, you know, should be quintessentially Notre Dame. There's not going to be a slide or a putt-putt golf course. But there should be sort of, whether it be cryotherapy recovery or laser therapy. I had written about float tanks a few years ago. You know, there's always these trends going in and out with recovery, but Notre Dame could kind of lead in that way. And, you know, it's impossible to not listen to Benjamin Morrison last weekend when he talks about facilities matter and, you know, maybe leaving. So spaces that will help him recover from that faster, maybe spaces. And the press release seemed to indicate that there'll be sort of kind of some, I don't know if you call it biomapping or what, but to identify weaknesses in, muscular weaknesses in these players that, you know, could prevent future injuries because you can train to them. I think there's a freshman early enrollee offensive lineman named Styles Prescott, who Marcus Freeman referenced after the Bugle game, where he had some imbalances and sort of leg strength. So it kind of held him back to balance that out so he didn't injure himself just because his body was out of whack. So all of that stuff, helping these players be more available, recover faster, get, stronger more quickly. That's what this space can be, because I think going to be great, but I think Notre Dame has it staffed up in a way, or is in the process of staffing it up in a way that they'll be able to take advantage of that. They've come a long way from the strength coach, and this is not a side eye at Matt Bayless, who did a great, great job, but I think strength coaches today, they're not only hoarse and big and barrel chested, they're also sort of scientists, or they got to be able to understand the science behind it. And I think the staffing that Notre Dame has done is really going to put this place in a position to take advantage of this new facility, which is obviously very, very costly as an investment.
They are less professional wrestlers, I think, is what you were trying to
look at. Yeah, that's probably a good way to look at it.
I always kind of looked at them that way, like in the past, but I'm curious. I mean, again, it's a never ending race. Like Notre Dame talked about how they visited Clemson. Well, that Clemson facility broke ground in 2015 or something, like a literal decade ago. Oklahoma's planning a new one, and their one that they currently have, I think, opened in 2016. So how do you kind of get ahead of that, so to speak, when you've got this, I don't want to call it a 2-year runway, because it's not like you're not going to be working and building during these 2 years, but how do you predict the future of college football, which I think we're all trying to figure out, because no one has an answer for that. But what's a program going to need in 2026 that will be true in 2031 that maybe they don't have right now? I don't know the answer to that. There's smarter people on that campus than me, but I'm curious how you build it for the future when the future is so murky.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But I think that this is sort of, this facility should be independent of the insanity of the sport. The ability to recover and get stronger or more flexible to be more durable, that doesn't have anything to do with NIL or the college football playoff expanding, right? I mean, and I don't know, maybe you could argue it does with the college football playoff expanding because you're playing more games. But
I would say, like, do you have an NIL brand academy or something? Hmm. I mean, you're not going to build out a whole thing there, but if this thing comes in-house, which I think eventually it will through legal purposes.
It does seem like there will be space for that. Or maybe it would be space in the Goog right next door. Right. Because even the press release seemed to hint a little bit about some media spaces that I took more as NIL opposed to interview rooms. I think that's part of it.
But I think just sort of the science is independent of the absurdity of the sport. So if you hit those marks the right way, if you do recovery right, if you do training right, the rest of it should take care of itself. Because what's the best NIL package, right? It's getting developed to be a pro prospect. It's as much as making five figures or six figures in college sounds good. I mean, these guys want to play in the pros, and that's where the real money is. So it just seems like the blank slate part of it with Notre Dame. They've got some things to work on with NIL. They've been very aggressive there. I think we referenced it on our last podcast. Notre Dame is, I think, in a much healthier space with NIL than maybe fans would just automatically assume. That's a positive for this place. But I think the Shields Family Hall has a chance not to win the arms race, like we both mentioned, because I don't think anyone's ever going to win it. But you got some new ammo to fight with. And it's, I think there's just the simple recruiting part of it is interesting too. I mean, Morrison mentioned, the visit, but also Freeman is talking, Bavakwa is talking, Swarbrick is talking, and there are, two dozen recruits there listening in town for the game. I don't know if Deuce Knight is interested in cold laser therapy or cryo, whatever, but the commitment to where this is all going to go, that can't not make an impression. Notre Dame talks about 4-4 forever, 4-for-40. Well, I mean, these players are also committing to a coach and a football program that is attached to a university or part of a university. And the commitment that Notre Dame, the university, is making into Notre Dame, the football program, I'm sure is not lost on these high school kids as they're figuring out what they want to do.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it's, 2 years ago, we were saying they need to fly private more. That was a thing. That was a real thing.
And they did.
They did. But we've come a long way. I always think back, I remember, I think it was definitely my first time there, but first year or two, I go to a Clemson practice. I go to the cafeteria after, and Dabo Sweeney sits down next to me. And I said, what's your favorite part of this? I got the slide, you got this, you got that. And he said, look around. Every seat's filled right now, an hour after practice. No one wants to leave. And I thought, that makes sense. And I remember thinking at the time, that's in some ways anti-Notre Dame, the same way, they have
I hear you.
They have our own cafeteria. We need them to eat in the dining halls. Well, no, these guys are a little bit different physically. I think the school itself is embracing this new world much better than previous regimes have, and more than they were 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, we talked to a lot of people at the periphery of the program. One commonality I think we both heard is Notre Dame's really matured in this regard. They're not petty, they're not cheap, they're not they're very much with it in a way that maybe they weren't not too long ago. And I think that's healthy for everybody. Now they just need to win a lot of football games.
Yeah. Well, on that front, I thought the actual blue gold game, I came out of that thinking that, yes, Notre Dame should win a lot of football games this year. And I wrote this in my final thoughts, and some people pushed back on it immediately. This might be Marcus Freeman's best chance. The schedule is set up the way that it is. The roster is talented. You think about the COVID exemptions and how that has helped this roster get incredibly old. Mills, Cross, Kaiser, RJ Oben, off the top of my head, guys that wouldn't be here without the 6-year exemption. So I came out of spring, and this is weird to say because their starting quarterback, who was a huge investment, really didn't do anything. But I came out of spring thinking, not only is this Marcus Freeman's best team, which he kind of
he tried really hard not to say it, but he said it.
which I feel like is growth as a head coach, because he's like, I'm going to regret what I'm about to say, but I can't help from saying it anyway. He sensed the trap being set, but this is his best team to date, but I also think it might be his best team in a while. Just based on all the dynamics, the schedule, COVID exemptions, like I explained, this team should be really, really good. And if this is not a playoff team, it will be a massive, massive disappointment.
I completely agree on that part. I think it's a pretty fine line, but like, yes, if they don't make the playoff, I think the season will be a failure. I wouldn't limit it to a playoff. I mean, I think they're good enough or talented enough and cohesive.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Could make a run. I'm not saying they're going to win a national championship this year, although who knows. But you look at that defense and everyone coming back. You look at the spring game where, again, outside of the offensive line, and you got to keep in mind who they're going against here, there weren't a whole lot of like, ooh, like every spring there's a, ooh, all right, they better get that fixed in a few months or else they're going to struggle. It felt like it was a lot more of like, oh, hey, Micah Gilbert. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Jeremiah Love.
Good, like a little more good on good, kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like the offensive tackle is a huge concern, both of those. But the rest of it, I agree. It was just, it felt like good players versus good players. Sometimes one good player made a play over against another good player. But they're both good.
It's time to get back outside with Roback, one of our favorite brands at The Independent. Whether it's polos, Q-zips, vests, crew necks, or hoodies, Roback is our go-to apparel when it comes to the golf course, gym, sitting around the fire, or even recording a podcast. You've seen Roback sponsor former Notre Dame athletes Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. And if you've attended a Notre Dame game, you've surely seen the Shamrock Polo around tailgates and in the stands. Roback goes by the motto, crave activity, and there's no better apparel to fit those needs. Listeners of The Independent can get 20% off your first purchase by using the promo code IRISH at Roback.com. Again, that's 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more on your first order. With the promo code IRISH, visit Roback.com.
And I think you referenced in your final thoughts something to the effect of, you know, be a positive for Marcus Freeman if we're no longer referring to him as like a third-year head coach or whatever.
Yes.
And I think that goes hand in hand with like, you need to at least win the games you're supposed to win. And you're supposed to win, I mean, there are 10, I wouldn't say gimmies, but 10 where they're going to be favored. I think the first one, the last one are up for debate. I still think the first one, like A&M's time. I'm more worried, especially with the offensive line, about that environment and that weather. In fact, on the positive side, they proved themselves to me at least to be a lot deeper defensively than I thought.
Especially up front, right?
And like, that, I think, would be a big factor in week one in Texas. So I think, you know, you get that big test very, very early. You get that big measuring stick and, you know, sort of like his first game at Ohio State where you knew it was a big game. You knew they probably weren't going to win it going in, but you didn't want to let that cloud the next week and the rest of the season. Unfortunately for them, it did. There's that kind of danger, if you will. But, I mean, this is a – I don't want to use the word weak, but multiple MAC teams. I mean, you get Louisville at home. You get Florida State at home. USC, obviously a talented program, but like, who knows what they'll be and who knows what they'll be in the final game of the year.
Yeah.
Are they playing for something or are they checked out because they had a disappointing season again? I don't know.
They're exhausted because they've been traveling to the Midwest every other week.
Well, they'll be, it's going to be a different team. I mean, they did not get up for the rivalry game with UCLA last year, which probably kept Chip Kelly from getting actually fired and dragged this thing out a couple more months than it should have. But like, that was a team that was like done at the end. It's really, really hard to predict out. And I say this, I feel like every year when we look at Notre Dame schedules and years where they end at USC, I mean, 2012, USC was the number one team in the country preseason and Notre Dame was unranked. And those roles certainly were reversed by the end of the year. 16, USC was not thought to be much. They end up, I think, winning the Rose Bowl that year, and Notre Dame was a top 10 preseason team that went 4-8. So it's really, really hard to predict this particular rivalry, that particular team in an even numbered year like this. But aside from that, again, I don't know what the line is. I'm sure there is one right now for opener against A&M. I still think that's a game you got to win if you're Notre Dame and you're going to be the team that we expect you to be this year. Yeah. But I think we're overemphasizing week one because of the rest of the schedule and because of how good and deep this team looks. And it looks like a damn good football team.
Yeah. If they win week one, then they could be 11-0 going to USC. If they lose week one, then they'll probably be 10-1 going to USC. barring injuries. And it's like the USC at the end, who knows? This, I mean, I'm not going to read their entire schedule, but they open against LSU. They play Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State, Washington, UCLA, a rivalry game for them, and then they finish with Notre Dame the week after their other rivalry game against UCLA. That's a brutal schedule. Notre Dame's is incredibly manageable. It is as weak a Notre Dame schedule as I can remember covering. Maybe I've covered worse.
From this point out, on paper, yes. I mean, they've had some that in retrospect didn't, like 2018 looked like Murderer's Row, and that ended up being, I know they went undefeated and they were good, but like that was not a tough schedule with the benefit of hindsight.
Will there be the equivalent of Louisville last year where it's a team we're not talking about that turns out to be a 10-2 type team? That's possible. Could be Louisville.
Probably not Purdue, but I don't know. I mean,
Probably not Purdue. But it just, you know, unless there's a team like that that jumps up and gets you, and like A&M and USC are the 10 post games. Last year was Clemson and Ohio State. That's a different set. The last 2 years it was Clemson and Ohio State. This is a completely different set of circumstances of the types of teams you're playing. So, yeah, it's like I came out of spring, the defensive line depth, Jason Onye is your fourth defensive tackle after Gabriel Rubio and Howard Cross and Riley Mills is outstanding. I think they're deeper at defensive end. I don't think that Bryce Young, the five-star freshman, might be ready for week one, but if that's your fifth or sixth defensive end, and he's 6'7", 240, and his dad's in the NFL Hall of Fame, like, good place to be. I thought their linebacker depth is much improved. They're probably a defensive back short of where they want to be, especially after they lost Micah Bell and Clarence Lewis to the portal in the spring. But, you know, Rod Hurd comes online as the other safety with Adon Shuler and Luke Talich on top, you know, with Xavier Watts leading the way. Like, that's a good group. Benjamin Morrison, when he's back, that's a good group. There's just the defense, I think, should be as good as it. It can't really be better than it was last year, statistically.
I think it could be the best of the country.
But, they should be as good as they were last year, and they were amazing last year. So I don't look at that. It's like you look at the schedule and be like, all right, if you can just get to 21 points most weeks, 24 points most weeks, like, that's a win. And then you just sort of get into watching the offense a little bit. With Mike Denbrock, it's clear that the quarterback run game will be a first or second resort, not a holy crap, we need 16 yards on fourth down. They will intentionally run the ball with whoever is starting, which will be Riley Leonard, but whoever is starting will run the ball. And I think that, in theory, maybe that alleviate some of the pressure on your offensive tackles. I don't know. That may be wishful thinking on my part, but the offense with Denbrock, the receiver depth is better. The quarterback depth and talent is way better. I mean, think back to Reese's year here. Is Buckner or Pine? I mean, would Buckner be QB5 and Pine QB6 on this team?
I don't know if I go that well. What versions of them are we talking about?
Where they were when the 2022 season started.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say just because dividing reps among six guys and five guys is a little bit different than four. But I mean, certainly the room is just different. We're recording this a few days after spring ball. I'm mildly surprised we haven't seen a Minchie or an Angeli go in the portal. And yet conversely, I also look at a guy like Angeli and think he's probably a year away from graduating. You hate to do the math in this regard, but like Riley Leonard did not play this spring. He did not play a lot at the end of last year for Duke. Steve Angeli has proven he can at least handle himself as a Power 5 quarterback. Do you stick it out as a backup with a chance to maybe get some extended meaningful time this year, get an Notre Dame degree and then transfer versus going somewhere tomorrow and starting? I mean, I don't know that Northwestern is looking at him, but I know Northwestern was looking at a quarterback before Brendan Sullivan went into the portal, and now they're they're desperate to get one because that was their guy. There are other programs like that where I know a guy like at least like Steve Angeli would start tomorrow. Not saying Kenny Mincy wouldn't, but he hasn't proven.
I'm a little surprised that as we record on April 24th at 11:09 Eastern, that everybody is still here. Because it's – and that – look, Notre Dame's doing their exit interviews for the semester right now, so those decisions maybe just haven't been made. They don't need to be made. The portal closes, I think, on the 30th, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, another week.
So there's time there. However, it's like you look at that room and you think all four of these guys can win Power Four level games. Like it, I think so often you see quarterbacks transfer and then that just never happens for them after they leave Notre Dame, whether it be Buckner at Alabama, Pine at Arizona State, Zaire at Florida. Golson, you know, played at Florida State.
Hendricks, Miami, Ohio.
Hendricks, Miami, Ohio. Good call. Good call there.
Connor Kill, you know, I don't know what you would say about that
Brendan one. Clark at Old Dominion. It just doesn't really happen. Either you drop down a level and have success or you go to another Power Five level and they're like, oh, the reason that you didn't play at Notre Dame is just like it's not happening.
To be fair, it wasn't. I don't know if that validates Notre Dame because I don't think the quarterback history there during that.
Yeah, no, I'm just, but I my point more is just like if Minchie and Angeli left, I would think they'll be starting it wherever they go next.
Yeah, Angeli definitely, Minchie.
Yeah, Angeli definitely, Minchie maybe. But I think Angeli, it's like, man, if you're Notre Dame, maybe this is another NIL discussion. You know, we got to talk about how much you pay the starting quarterback. QB2 probably is worth an investment as well, especially when your QB1 has had some injury issues. So, man, if they can keep Angeli for one more year as the backup to Leonard and then open it up in the competition, and then next year you just blow it up and see, you know, whoever wins it. And if you don't win it, you're probably out. But, man, that would be on top of all the depth defensively. Nobody ever talks about quarterback depth as the reason a team competes for a championship. But Notre Dame should have it this year.
Ohio State won it all 10 years ago with a third
good ball. Yeah, that's
rarely does that happen. Rare examples, right? But I do think this spring, Micah Bell this week, the punter last week, Clarence Lewis, I think a week before. Yeah. Really only three guys spring, post spring so far have gone on the portal. God bless them all. None of them are devastating departures. And I do wonder, to your point, you know, Michigan just won a national title last year without a roster of five-star guys, but they were so unbelievably deep at every single position. Depth matters. Like, Deion Sanders can get up there and say, who did we lose? Well, one, you won four games last year. Two, like...
Yeah, did you see Dylan Edwards hop in the portal?
Yeah, I saw that as well.
One-time Notre Dame commitment.
I know, and...
Prospect 2 launched 1,000 think pieces about how Colorado may be in a position to out-recruit places like Notre Dame. No, not really.
man, you got me off track now with Dylan Edwards in Colorado. I just think depth is maybe even more of a premium now than it was in recent years. Because especially if you're going to be playing in Notre Dame's case, 15-game season? No, 16 if you 16 win it all. 16-game
season. Yeah, there was an interesting – the Athletic has done some stories on the portal and, like, trends, and one of them was kind of focused on Michigan a little bit and Nebraska about should the NIL focus – you know, we talk about it on your top 10 players. You know, what about players 60 through 85? And then if you can fund some walk-ons as scholarship players from – player 86 through 95 or 105, is that a good investment? Michigan would be a case in point that maybe it is. I think that can be a finishing product for you. I don't think you're going to win a national championship only because you're deep. You have to have elite guys at the top, and Michigan did. When it comes to a backup quarterback, maybe that's an example of, you know, where this guy is not in your first 22, but should be sort of recruited to stay as if he was. You know, I just look, but the depth question, defensive line is obvious. You know, Kingston Viliamaasa at linebacker. I don't know how he doesn't have a role this year in the defense, even if he's the third middle linebacker. I think they probably are going to have 8 or 9 receivers who can play.
Running back still loaded, even without us.
Yeah, running back still loaded.
Tight end with Evans is loaded. Now, without him, tight end with,
yeah, that's – it sounds like he is not going to be ready when the season starts, but he will play at some point. You know, Jabron Payne as your third running back, it's really good after Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price in no particular order. So it's interesting because I think that the recruiting output or input from Marcus Freeman and his staff probably has not kicked on as much as I thought that it would have when he got the job. Like, I thought that maybe they would go from finishing under Brian Kelly like 12th in recruiting to like 6th, and it's been more going from 12th to like 9th or 10th. And yet I do think like the depth on the team is better now than it has been in a while. I'm not going to say it's better than like peak Lou Holtz era, but it just feels like a much deeper roster than what Notre Dame has been able to throw out there. Most of the Brian Kelly era, it's like, it will be forever burned in my brain. Julian Love goes out of the Cotton Bowl against Clemson, and then the entire defense collapses because one person is out for one quarter. I don't think that's like Notre Dame is constructed so much better than that now that they can withstand losing one player or two player or three players in a way that they couldn't often enough, in the Kelly era.
Yeah, I agree completely. I want to go back. We were talking about defense and, you know, you said they'll be as good as they were last year, but better than they were last year. Last year, they finished 5th in total defense. You know, the 4 teams ahead of them were?
Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan.
Yes. I figured you get those 3. Four, you won't. No, Ohio.
Ohio.
Look, out of those teams ahead of them, and Air Force was 6, Iowa was 7, Clemson was 8. Michigan's still going to be really good on defense. They obviously won't be as good as they were last year. I still think they'll be really good. I don't think Penn State will be as good on defense. They've lost a lot of talent. They lost Manny Diaz, their coordinator. Ohio State should still be really good there. But really, I mean, like Iowa's not going to be as good because they don't have to be as good. They'll actually have like this thing called offense, the other side of the ball, where they don't have to play with their hair on fire all the time. But I look at Ohio State, Notre Dame, Clemson still, and Georgia, Georgia. Like Notre Dame, I think, is in that conversation right now for best defenses in the country. And when you look at returning talent, I'm not sure anyone other than maybe Clemson and Ohio State have more on that side of the ball. And again, that's just such a great starting place to be in. You've got work to do offensively. We understand that. But there are pieces there to help you get through. And let's face it, this tackles, as big of a concern as they are, A&M's got players. I don't want to downplay A&M, but like, you're not going against the equivalent of Notre Dame on the defensive line most Saturdays next fall.
Right. Yeah. I think I was more concerned about Texas A&M on signing day 2 years ago than I am right now. I mean, they have a lot of really good players, but also a lot of really good players left. So, and they're not, those good players are going to Ole Miss or Alabama. They're not going to, Troy. Much love for Jared Parker here, but they're staying at this level if not going up. So it's, that depth has been hurt. And, does Notre Dame have a deeper defensive line than Texas A&M? I would need to look at Texas A&M's roster a little bit more closely to say that.
I'd be surprised if they didn't.
But Notre Dame has a very deep defensive line. So,
who would you rather have in the – that A&M group, whomever it is, in its first ever game together under a new coaching staff.
No.
Versus Notre Dame's under Al Washington.
Yeah, 3 years with that. Absolutely. I would much rather have you know, Notre Dame's situation than A&M's in virtually every capacity. I think Notre Dame is in a much better spot than Texas A&M, you know, but Mike Elko is a great coach. I just don't know if he's going to be a great coach in his first game ever at Texas.
Yeah. A&M. I mean, I wouldn't underestimate him. He won.
No, I wouldn't. And I am not.
I don't underestimate him. I'm more concerned just once Notre Dame has not played an SEC environment like that since Georgia in 2019, playing it that early in the calendar, whether it's at night or not, it's going to be hot as hell.
I don't know. Does Ohio State count as an SEC environment?
No.
Okay. That was pretty loud.
Not. I was going to make a joke. I won't make it about what makes A&M unique, but I don't want all the Aggie Yell leaders in my mentions. that environment, that heat, I just think I'm much more concerned about the like mental framework of everyone going into that than I am the physical. You know, look at they've not many, but there have been I always think of 2017 Miami when Miami team was not better than Notre Dame, I don't think, talent wise. No. But like you hear stories about how shaken this team was as their bus pulls in and they're getting like bottles thrown. Like they just were so thoroughly unprepared for that environment. And to be fair, the University of Miami had not shown itself to be that kind of environment in the post Orange Bowl era. And they kind of went back to their roots in that regard for that night. And it resulted in this perfect storm.
One night only.
Literally one night only. I just think this is so different from any road challenge they've had in the last 5 years that's where my biggest concern lays.
Yeah. I was just the game at A&M and the heat and the defensive line rotation reminded me a little bit of, you know, when Notre Dame opened at Texas in 2016. Yeah. Were you there for that game? I don't know if you were.
I was covering them for ESPN, but I was not there. Texas was back that night though.
Texas was back. Tyrone Swoops, all that, but it was unbelievably hot, like just scorching down there. And this is how deep Notre Dame's defensive line was. Isaac Rochelle, great guy. He played 87 snaps. 87.
Double OT, right?
Double OT, 87 snaps. Like, they were – that program was just set up to fail in an
environment. They were really good offensively, at least talent-wise. Like, they put up 40-something in that game.
They had some good players. Didn't really ever put it together, but that team
that was not a good Texas. Texas fired Charlie Strong at the end of that year. It was not a good Texas team.
But Notre Dame went down there and was gassed immediately because they just had no depth. They couldn't hold up in that kind of environment. And this team, you know, from a conditioning standpoint, sure, but just from a recruiting and a depth standpoint, it's a million miles from where they were back then. That I think really is very, very significant for this year.
Completely. I kind of forgot about that game. That year was just.
It was a great trip. They could play. They really should play at Texas more often. Is my takeaway from that.
I did my bachelor party in Austin. I know it well. It was fun.
Good times.
On that note.
Yes. Next, you want to get into bachelor party stories?
No, I don't remember most of them.
That means it was probably a good time. But yeah, I just think the way the roster is constructed, the way it's recruited with developed, the way the coaching staff is recruited or has been developed and retained, there's just Notre Dame has a lot to like about it going into this year. The program is in a very healthy spot. Now you need the head coach to sort of tie it all together. That's the next step for Freeman is, like I wrote and you referenced, you know, he's not a third year head coach. He's just the head coach. This is the year where he can sort of make that jump. Because if he does make that jump, he's going to get a contract extension. And that would be healthy for everybody around Notre Dame if Freeman can sort of kick on from here and, you know, take some of the really hard lessons learned over the previous 2 years and apply them, opposed to just moving on from one lesson to the next lesson to the next lesson. to move forward that way. That's sort of the next step there.
Get you out on this. Biggest surprise, good surprise, spring player-wise for you.
Let's see. The biggest good surprise in spring, Billy Amaasa would be way up there for me. There was a play in the spring game where he dropped like 20 yards in coverage and broke up a pass to Jaden Greathouse. And I was like, holy crap. Like, you're just not supposed to move like that as a middle linebacker. But the biggest one to me still is Carr, because I've never seen a freshman quarterback look like that in 24 years, just never, nobody even close. So that is what, like, I thought he would be good, but I didn't think he would be this good this quickly. And if you're Notre Dame, it's something that you look ahead to 2025 and beyond and think like, all right, maybe they have the kind of guy that they've been looking for the past 15 years. So that was the biggest surprise for me. Not that I didn't think it would be good, but I didn't think it would be this good. So I don't know what was on the field. What sort of grabbed your attention most leaving?
Obviously accurate. I was thinking more of like what's going to show itself on the field this fall, though. That's not to take away from Carr. Deion Colsey, like, was kind of a forgotten man. And if he can have one of those last kind of college tries that really adds to the depth of the receiver room. I mean, I think it was, we have not talked about this group in a way of, hey, it'd be great if he could come along, cause that would be a great addition. It's, oh shoot, he's out. What are we going to do now? So I think that was impressive. And then in the game, I would say Eli Raridan, just the way they relied on him early, I thought was notable, because he wasn't really fully healthy this spring and was kind of eased along throughout practice. So to see him as tight end one, so to speak, I thought was encouraging, especially if we don't know exactly when Mitchell Evans will be back.
Yeah, no, that's one too. It just, it's like that. If Evans was healthy, then the offensive game plan opens up even more for Mike Denbrock. But as it is, it just seems like he can mix and match with those wide receivers. It was strange watching the game and thinking like, all right, I think they only had four available scholarship receivers, and one of them was a freshman, Micah Gilbert. And yet, unlike last year when they only had three or four, it wasn't a situation where we're like, well, that's it for the offense, guys. What do you want to say
at all? Yeah.
So that's a change too that I think can be a real positive. But there's a lot to like about Notre Dame going in this year. We'll be talking about it on the regular all summer here on the Independent. Hopefully we'll get some guests and do that part of the podcast as well. But look, Notre Dame is set up to, I think, be one of sort of the trendy teams going into 2024. It's set up for them. So it'd be interesting to sort of see how they take advantage of it and try to maximize this opportunity. Cause I mean, look, no, I don't think Notre Dame is in a position where you're going to be like Georgia and or Ohio State, and you just expect to be top four as a birthright. But this is a team not only top 12, but I think can go much higher than that. And it'd be interesting. It's going to be very fascinating to sort of see how it all shakes out.
A home football playoff game at Notre Dame Stadium would be
happening.
Awesome.
It's happening.
So you're back from vacation. Spring ball's come and gone. I'm headed on mine. I don't want to say it too loud because I don't think anyone's here, but we are doing Disneyland. If anyone has Rex, I'm a rookie. Please send them my way for a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old. But I will not be gone for 270 days or whatever it was that Pete was.
You're not going to cross the internet.
I'll Wi-Fi where I am outside of Disneyland. So if there is an emergency pod, Reggie Bush gets his Heisman reinstating. We need to do an emergency recording.
I don't think we're doing that podcast. So
no.
All right. On that note, we'll wrap up there. He's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Independent.